You're listening to a DM podcast.
Only other times I've been in hospital is for childbirth. So never having a serious event and having to really listen to my body before, I simply just missed it all. Absolutely. It wasn't something that came to my mind at all. It was still something that I had done to myself. I had eaten too much. I'd eaten too much rich food in Brisbane and this was on me.
The center and all stations of the child are
still breathing okay at the moment.
Is it a big property?
That blood pressure is not coming up.
493, understood, thank you.
Hi, my name is Lana Mitchell from the Royal Flying Doctor Service. This is a podcast about life in the bush, mateship, courage, and the role that the Royal Flying Doctor Service plays in serving rural and remote communities. This is the Flying Doctor Podcast.
My name is Kira Lee Dargan from the Royal Flying Doctor Service, and I'm an Aboriginal woman of the Wiradjuri Nation. This podcast has been recorded on Ngunnawal land and is being broadcast across all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations. We at the Royal Flying Doctor Service want to acknowledge elders, past and present. The RFDS recognises that this is First Peoples land and always will be.
I did an interview back in series 2 of the Flying Doctor podcast, which talked in part about Weipa, a small mining community on the Cape in Queensland. The Royal Flying Doctor Service has long served the mining industry, with most of their major hubs located in very remote parts of the country where there are no hospitals. Weipa is one of those communities, and my guest in this episode is Sarah Ward, who works for Rio Tinto and earlier was based in Weipa. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
So you lived in Weipa for quite a while, didn't you?
I did. I moved to Weipa in 2007, which seems like a lifetime ago now, but spent 15 years of my working life and my home life living and working in Weipa.
Could you describe what that community looks like? Because it's quite unique, very much a tropical setting, but could you describe it for me?
Yeah, the community itself is quite small and compact. The housing is all close by. You can walk from one friend's house to another kind of in one day. My son really loved riding his bike around and going to friends' houses. I used to describe it to people as kind of stepping back to the 1970s, where the kids just kind of played on the street with their friends until dark, and then came in and had dinner. So, in terms of what it looked like visually, kind of an older 1970s style houses. You know, the very basic shops that are available to you. We're really lucky to have a full-size Woolworths, so that was definitely one of the highlights of Weipa. But yeah, just the basics. Everything was there that you needed.
And it's on the coast, right? What does the landscape look like?
It is. It's set. Weipa Township is set between two main rivers. So there's the Emly River and the Mission River. Quite large rivers. So it's kind of nestled between those two. And as you can imagine, in the tropics, rivers and the sea kind of come with mangroves. So it's quite mangrovey. If you think, what does crocodile country look like? Weipa is the epitome of what that is. So mangroves, river systems, and beautiful blue water.
Would you see crocodiles on a regular basis?
Yes. So when working for the mine, there was a mine face that was across the Mission River, and there's a single lane, kilometre long bridge that goes across up to Andoom Mine. And often it was always a fight to be the passenger on that trip, so that you could look out the window and see the crocodiles sunbaking down on the sandbanks below, particularly in wintertime. I can't say I ever saw any in town. None were crossing the road or kind of causing havoc that way, but definitely quite a lot in and around the mangroves, and it wasn't about seeing them. It's just that you knew that they were there.
Yeah, so I presume it's a lot like Darwin, where you don't go swimming really anywhere. Because Darwin, my brother lives in Darwin, and yeah, you just don't swim.
It's simply not safe. My husband, we've had various boats over our years in Weeper, but at one point when my son was about 10, he decided to get quite a small kind of 4 metre tinny, thinking that he could just go out for the morning and flick some lures around in the river. He came back one day, he'd had it probably a couple of months, and he came back one day and said, I think I need to sell the boat. I'm like, why? What's wrong? He said, oh, the crocodiles are bigger than the boat. So I think it's time to trade it in. I was like, I think that's a good idea. Okay, yep, that can go. So yes, they're there.
They're there. So you were there in Weeper for 15 years and you're now back in Brisbane. But there was a time just a few years ago where you were working in Weeper and you had travelled to Brisbane for work and you weren't feeling well. Would you tell me what was happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of embarrassing to talk about because it is the thing you think, looking back on it, why didn't I realise what was happening? But yeah, I didn't. I had to come down to the Brisbane office for a week. So by myself, my family stayed in Weeper. So came down to work, was really busy time, kind of working from early morning to kind of dark and into the night. I was meeting up with my sister and her family for dinner one night. I think it was the Thursday before my last day at work in the city. And she came in and we were going out for dinner and I just felt really uncomfortable. Like my pants were too tight and just felt really bloated and just this pain that was happening, kind of undescript pain. It wasn't something that I had felt before, but I just thought that I'd eaten too much fancy food, too much non-Weeper food. I'd been definitely having lunches out and getting some nice takeaways while I was here. So I just took some Panadol and went through it. For dinner that night, I just couldn't eat anymore. I was like, okay, I've had a couple of bites. I'm a bit too tender and feeling too sick to kind of have any more. So I kind of made the best of it. Had a good time with my sister and her family and kind of went home to bed that night. That night was probably the worst so far. So I had been kind of feeling this kind of come on, but that was the time that I thought, oh, I really just don't feel very well. So woke up in the middle of the night that night, really uncomfortable, and took some more Panadol. And it was kind of from there that I started to need some pain relief, either Panadol or Nurofen or both, kind of over the course of the next week.
Wow. Did you think, I must be constipated or I must be, like, what was going through your head?
Yeah, like I've just eaten rich food. I've just done too much to myself. I need to exercise. I'm just getting unfit and unwell. I've overindulged. That's what I was thinking. I just I thought that I'd done this to myself.
Wow. So you're self-medicating and you're just sort of soldiering on. Australians are so famous for soldiering on. Okay, so what happened next? Did you return to Weeper still in pain?
I did, yeah, and it would come and go. It wasn't as if it was constant kind of crippling pain. It wasn't like that. I think obviously with the medication, just Panadol and Nurofen, it was kind of just taking the edge off enough, and then I wouldn't think about it and I'd be okay. So yep, returned back to Weeper that weekend, made it through that weekend, and then had a whole nother week at work before I did anything about it. And as you can imagine, so I was in the orange and blue, so the mining uniform, so to speak. So my pants were getting tighter and tighter and I was just kind of trying to deal with it. I was a leader. I had a team to look after. I had a family to run. School continues. Nothing kind of stops when you're a busy working mum. So I just kept going and I just kept getting through it.
Were you thinking at one point, gosh, I'm so bloated. I just don't, like, why? I'm barely eating yet. I seem to be just growing.
Probably didn't think that until the Friday of that following week. So kind of a week and a half, 2 weeks into kind of pain by then. But by that Friday, it was pretty continuous. I was uncomfortable and not feeling great and was really looking forward to the weekend to try to have some rest time. So by that Friday, which I found out later being a really clear indicator of a burst appendix, when I took my work pants off in the afternoon, when I released my belt, my pain was quite substantial, which I later learned is called rebound pain. It's when your whole insides are filling up with fluids, and that's when the pressure is taken off is when the most pain can occur. So didn't know that at the time, but that's what happened on that Friday afternoon. I'm like, oh, that really does hurt. So I went into rest mode at that point and then tried to take some care of myself and put my husband in charge of the kids, and my neighbour brought over dinner, and that's kind of where she started being involved in my journey of this. How long has this been happening, Sarah? What are you doing here? So that's when I probably started to talk to someone about it. So I don't think I'd even mentioned it to my husband at that point. Just too busy. Life just goes on, right?
Gosh, us mums, we're terrible. We really are terrible. So bad. We shouldn't take our own advice at times.
You know, exactly.
We're very quick to care for everyone we love, but we tend to neglect the obvious signs that something's not right.
Exactly.
Okay, so your neighbour's bringing you dinner, your husband's looking after the kids, you're really feeling rotten. What happened then? So this has now been going on for like 10 days or so, right?
Yes,
it's been going on
right.
for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And from kind of really minimal, kind of bearable, just something uncomfortable through to kind of that Friday afternoon of I'm kind of getting to the point of holding my stomach and really not feeling very well. Look, living in a remote community, my husband and my children, both of my children did weeper dirt carts. So think go-karting on marbles out on a dirt track, because that's what Bauxite is, right? So it's basically weekend full of dirt karting was in front of me. So my husband has a cart and the two kids' carts to get ready on Saturday morning. So he's straight into getting those ready. By 3 o'clock, I need to have the kids out there. He's already left to go and prepare the track. And because I'm not really saying, you know, I'm really hurt, everything just goes on as normal, right? So it's like, I'll make it work. It's fine. So I head out with the kids. I've got my jeans on. I've got my boots on. I've got my long sleeve shirt on. And I'm really uncomfortable, obviously, at this point. So I get the kids out there and I don't have too much to do. So I'm in the pits kind of getting them dressed and sorted. But once all of that's done, they're kind of ready for their races and off they go. I did actually usually do the gate and let the go-karts in and out, but I wasn't doing that this time. I just couldn't possibly do it. So I sat down in my camping chair and I just kind of stayed there for probably a good hour. And I remember taking a selfie and sending it to my neighbour and was like, this is what I'm doing at dirt carts. And she called me straight away and said, why are you there? You're still clearly very unwell. What's happening? And that made me really think. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go home. I don't need to be here. I'm going to go home. I'm going to take some more Panadol and I'm just going to rest on the couch. So I did that, but the kids wanted to come with me. So obviously I took them home with me as well. And that's when my friend came back over and she gave me a bit of a lecture. And it was probably then that I realised, I'm now really quite cold. I've taken Panadol and now I'm quite cold. Maybe I'm getting the flu is what I thought.
Sarah! Oh, my gosh. I want to reach out to your neighbour and give them a hug.
I know. Big shout out to Marie. Well done. Thanks, Maz. I know, right? So, yeah, it was then that I thought, I'm really not very well. And we made a plan that night. Because my husband was still out at dirt carts at this point. It goes till quite late in the night because it's too hot to do it during the day. So we made a plan that she would take me into the hospital in the morning. Obviously, my husband can stay home and look after the kids. So that was the plan on the Saturday night. So 8 o'clock in the morning. I ended up calling the hospital first because I'm like, I don't feel like, I know, so silly, you can slap me. I don't feel like this is something you go to the hospital for. I don't go to the hospital. That's not what it's for. You know, it's for really sick people, right?
And I've just got a stomach ache, which I've had for 10 days.
Which is not critical. It's not emergency, surely. Yeah. But I think living in a remote community, Lana, you need to be respectful of the resources that are there. And for me, it was about not abusing the things that were there for really critical things, right? So I didn't go to the hospital for things that I didn't need to. And I used the GP whenever I could and kind of respected the things that were available. Being in a remote community, you know, as soon as everyone abuses these things, then, you know, it's not there for the people who need them. So that was kind of my mindset.
It's a limited resource and you're trying to be mindful and be respectful for the
fact
that
it's a weekend.
It does really communicate, Sarah, that you in your mind really had no idea about the severity of your condition, like none. So it sounds like, I mean, I might be wrong, but it sounds like you're almost treating it like, you know, menstrual cramps or something. Oh, she'll be right. You know, take Panadol, lie down. It'll be okay.
Not knowing anyone who's had this before, not ever being really sick. Only other times I've been in hospital is for childbirth, obviously. So never having a serious event and having to really listen to my body before, I simply just missed it all. Absolutely. It wasn't something that came to my mind at all. It was still something that I had done to myself. I had eaten too much. I'd eaten too much rich food in Brisbane and this was on me, which is embarrassing, right? You don't want to go to a hospital and say, I ate too much food. Not ideal.
As I mentioned earlier, this podcast has been made possible with the support of Isuzu Ute Australia. Having reliable vehicles is imperative in the harsh Australian outback, and Isuzu have provided D-Max Utes and MUX SUVs to pull 7 large RFDS flight simulators as they engage in school, community and field day activities for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. These simulators are full-size planes, minus the wings, and the Isuzu D-Max and MUX vehicles are a perfect match for the long-distance heavy towing demands of these RFDS simulators right across Australia. So keep an eye out for them as they travel around each state, and we would love to see photos and locations on our Flying Doctor podcast community Facebook page when you see them. So where were we at? So you were going to go to the hospital. You called them. What did the hospital say when you said, oh, look, I've been experiencing stomach pains? It's actually been going on for almost a couple of weeks now. And, like, what did they say?
You could probably imagine. They said, oh, just come in, love. Yeah, come in. I'm like, I know it's the weekend. She's like, oh, the uncle doctor is here. So just come in, love, and we'll check you out. And I'm like, okay. Made me feel a little bit better, like I wasn't wasting everyone's precious time. So, yeah, I called them and they said yes. So I walked over to my friend across the street and she was getting ready with her kids and was taking me in. But I did walk over very hunched over. So by this stage, I couldn't walk properly. I was bending and holding my stomach as I walked. So it was becoming very clear to me that it had escalated beyond kind of something that I could look after myself.
Right. Now, had your husband come to notice that you were a bit off colour?
Yeah, so when he came home, well, we talked about it on the Saturday, obviously, morning when he was getting ready to go out. I was like, I'll bring the kids out, but I won't be able to do the gate this week. I'm just going to take it easy. And obviously on the Friday night when my neighbour brought over dinner and he was in charge. So he kind of knew where I was at. But, so I had told him when he came home from dirt carts on the Saturday night that Maz was going to take me into the hospital just to see what was going on in the morning. And he's like, yeah, I think that's a good idea. But of course, you know, I wasn't making a fuss about it. So then he didn't outwardly know kind of how bad it was getting. So yeah, I feel a bit bad for kind of keeping that to myself.
So Maz is over the street and you're, you know, walk over all hunched up and just trying to, unable to straighten up and stand straight. And so you get over there and she bundles you into the car and takes you to the hospital. What happened when you walked in there and they got a chance to actually examine you?
Yeah, I was really lucky that I don't know the terminology, but it's the lead doctor was on call that weekend. So Dr. Nick, who everyone knows in Weipa, Dr. Nick was there that day. Maz is, it was, she's not there anymore either, but she was the vet nurse. So known by everyone in the land of Weipa. Everyone has a dog and everyone knows the vet nurse, Maz. So of course we come in and that's the first thing that Dr. Nick says is something about thanks for taking care of my dog last weekend. And we have a joke because I needed to look after Maz's daughter while she went and looked after Dr. Nick's dog. So everyone knows everyone, right? So off I kind of creep in with Dr. Nick and I lay on the bed and he's got someone else. I think he's stitching up someone who's injured themselves, done a mischief on a quad bike out in the bush. So he's busy doing that for the time being. So the nurse actually takes my temperature in the triage section first. She said, "Oh, you're running a fever." It's like, "Oh, okay, that's not good." Unknown to me, that I'd actually already had an infection and it was starting to turn sepsis, which is very, very bad. So I had a fever, so she wrote that down. She asked me my pain rating. I said a 4. I'm still walking, right? I'm okay. I'm not dying.
I'm not dying. Dying would be a 9.
Right.
And childbirth is an 8. And so it's not childbirth or dying. So
not either of those things.
I must be at a 2, maybe a 3.
Right?
Oh, okay, a 4.
I'll go, because you could imagine that was quite a stretch for me to say a 4. So I was like, 4? I can still walk. I'm not in a wheelchair. Yeah, exactly. I don't. Okay. Anyway, you get where I'm coming from. So she scribbles on my chart and she pops me in the bed and we wait for Dr. Nick to be finished stapling up the young lad. And he comes over and he, you know, has a chat and I tell him about the days. And he's like, okay, yeah, could be this, it could be that. You know, let's get the ultrasound over here. I'm not really good at this though, so I don't expect to see anything. If I can't, then we might call in the radiographer and we'll see what's going on. So I said, okay. So he lifts up my shirt and he pokes around on my tummy a little bit. And this is where I learnt the term rebound pain. So he was kind of pushing quite forcefully, as you could imagine. You know, I'm sure you've all been to the doctor before, pushing around, just having a feel. And it's then that he lifted up his hand. So, you know, as they do it, kind of the two hands, he lifted them up to finish and he started saying, okay, well, I can't feel anything. And at that point, I screamed very, very loudly. Maz could hear me in the waiting room when I screamed and then burst into tears because that was the most painful thing that I think I've ever felt. And he said, okay, Sarah, this is called rebound pain and this indicates that your abdomen is filling with fluid and that there's going to be a serious infection somewhere inside you. So it's probably your appendix, but let's do an ultrasound and find out. And obviously gave me some nice medication to deal with the pain that I was in at that point. So it was right then and there that it was like, okay, this is actually very serious.
Did you sit there sort of shaking your head and saying, but I thought it was no big deal? Like, were you shocked at hearing what it actually was going on?
And I think that's why I screamed so loudly at the rebound pain that I felt as well, because it was so unexpected. I just didn't, I wasn't expecting that to happen. And then, of course, once that did and he said, you know, this is what's happening, that I was like, uh-oh, yeah, this is actually very bad. I didn't feel in danger or like, you know, it was life-threatening at that point, but I thought, I've got this wrong, yes.
Yeah, I've stuffed up.
Yeah, oopsie, yeah. Oopsie. So really funnily though, when Dr. Nick first came over and the nurse was saying, oh, you know, this is the triage information, she used the word stoic. And I'm like, okay, that's a compliment, right? Like, stoic is a good thing. But she said it when she said, Sarah's pain rating is a number 4, considered stoic. So that meant that I was kind of underestimating the situation that I was in. So now I use stoic as an offensive term. Oops.
So they did the ultrasound. What happened when they did the ultrasound?
Yeah.
Did that reveal more?
Yeah, so Dr. Nick did the ultrasound and as he said, I'm really bad at this, so if I can see something, then that's not a good sign. So as soon as he did it, he could see my appendix. He said, oh, there's your appendix, and it's supposed to be 4 centimetres long at the most, and it's 12 centimetres long. And I can see all of the fluid that's already in your abdomen. So it was absolutely burst, and it was as enlarged as it possibly could be. And interestingly, and I don't even remember which side, you know, there's like that appendix pain theory where you get it on one side of your body, and I can't remember which side it is, left or right. I don't know, because mine was very central. It was really just below my belly button the whole time. Like, I wouldn't have said it was one side or another, but he thinks that because it's as it's kind of as it's gotten larger and larger and sicker and sicker, it's kind of moved itself into the middle in my abdomen. So that's why I didn't feel that traditional kind of one-sided pain over the 10 days beforehand.
Wow. Now, I mean, I don't want to dwell on this, but this is a really serious medical condition, because that means essentially your appendix has burst, your intestines are now leaking into the body cavity and into the bloodstream, which means that you have the chance of, as you mentioned earlier, contracting sepsis, which means blood poisoning across the whole body with, yeah. So how did the doctor react, and what happened next?
Yeah, he had the radiologist come in on call just to confirm. He wanted to make sure that was honestly what he was seeing, because as he said, he wasn't the best at that. And funnily enough, my son was best friends with the radiologist's son, and was actually had ridden his bike over to his house that morning. And I said, oh, could you maybe also ask Craig to send my son home? He's over there playing. He's like, okay, sure. So Craig came in, the radiologist, and he did a number of scans. But after he did the first one, he said, yep, Sarah needs to go now. So Dr. Nick and the Weaver Hospital started that process of organising RFDS from that point. Craig was really careful just to do lots and lots of scans, so that once I got to Cairns, they had all of the information that they needed to just move forward straight away. So, yeah, that happened pretty quickly. Of course, Maz had been brought back in at this stage and told that what's going on, and she hurried home to get the family sorted out and into action. So, yeah, from there it happened really quickly.
Right. Now, Weeper has a hospital, but they don't have the capacity to deal with a burst appendix. So they were going to send you to Cairns, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So Weeper very much has great staff and facilities available and a state-of-the-art hospital. But as you can imagine, in a remote community hub like that, they can't do everything. So there isn't childbirth, there isn't surgery, there isn't any of those resources available. So rely quite heavily on the flying doctor to transport critically ill, or in my case, not so critically ill, but apparently critically ill patients back to Cairns for the treatment that they need at the Cairns Base Hospital. Yeah.
Had you ever flown with the Royal Flying Doctor Service before?
No, never. And in fact, didn't really know anyone who had. Of course, you hear stories and you hear car accidents and the like where that needs to happen. But I didn't know anyone personally that had that happen, and I hadn't needed to do that either. So, no, it was a brand new experience.
Do you remember that flight well?
I do. So from when the RFDS were called, when I was in the hospital, it was probably only an hour till I was in the ambulance heading out to the airport. I was really lucky that there was a plane already in the Cape. It had been up higher and another patient was on board. I don't remember too much about that, but I was very lucky that it was nearby and that that I could jump into the second seat or second bed and be on the plane really quickly. So no, I don't. Internally, I felt comforted by the fact that I would be looked after on the way down. I wasn't nervous or scared, and because I was still very awake and conscious around what was happening, it was okay. I didn't need too much for the journey, right? I just needed to get to Cairns. So that's kind of what I had in my mind, is this is okay, this will be fine. I'm okay, I'm being looked after, and I just need to get to Cairns.
So how long was that flight from Weeper to Cairns?
I think it was about an hour. in the air, and I remember taking a photo out of the window, saying, "Oh, here I am." So when I was ready, I could send that back to my husband and Maz. But pretty uneventful, which is exactly how you want your flight to be, right? The nurse that was the Zom with me was continuously checking on me and making sure I was okay. But I really just didn't need anything. I just needed to get to Cairns. So that's kind of where I was, and the other person on board kind of needed a little bit more support than I did. So again, even though I was really unwell, I was more worried about another person than I was myself. But I really appreciated the fact that it was uneventful. I didn't need that. And to feel like you're already on an air ambulance, so to speak, and you know, this is a really serious situation, that I was looked after.
And so your husband was left with the kids?
Yeah, he was. So he packed me a bag, brought it back down to the hospital for me, and said my goodbyes to them with me getting on the plane. They were pretty excited. So, you know, it was like, oh, this is not the norm. This doesn't usually happen in our house. So yeah, he went home and booked some flights down the next day so that he could be nearby when I was released from hospital, assuming that I wouldn't be able to fly home straight away. So they all came down to Cairns as soon as they could to meet me there that next day too. So he had to go home and book flights and get the kids sorted and so on. So
they fly you to Cairns, and I presume they whip you straight into surgery. Do you remember any of the conversations there, or was it all a bit of a blur?
Yeah, it's a bit of a blur, but so I got in. I think I left Weeper at maybe 11:30 in the morning. I think I ended up going to surgery about 10 p.m. at night. So that Sunday night, I was taken into surgery, but it was continuous activity throughout that process. So into triage, into ED, and then a CT scan, and then kind of prep, and then felt like straight into surgery. So it all happened very much, quite quickly in my mind, at least over that period of time. And I think I ended up getting back to the ward, I don't know, 3 a.m. in the morning.
Wow. So what do they do in that circumstance? Do they just like staple or sew up the bowel where it's ruptured and remove anything? Or what do they do to clean up after a burst appendix? That's probably a horrible question, but I'm just
it's pretty yucky.
I presume you can't take a vacuum cleaner in there and just like, what do you do?
I didn't know any of this either, but I was able, fortunately, they were able to do the microscopic surgery, so go in through three keyholes rather than the massive slice open. So I'm very lucky that they could do that, because if it is really, really bad, they do just, you know, need to cut open and do what they need to do. But essentially it was keyhole surgery. So they removed the appendix. The doctor used the words, we had to nip off the end of your bowel because it was infected. Okay, thank you. And then they do actually, they fill your stomach with gas, and then that's how they get all of the fluid, the liquid that's inside your abdomen out as well. So the aftermath is this massive kind of pregnant belly full of gas that they've put in there, and it just needs to dissipate through your organs to get out afterwards. So I was really lucky that they could do keyhole. So that was good. But the aftermath was pretty damn uncomfortable, I must tell you.
Oh, wow. So what is the recovery like after something like that?
Yeah, so it's supposed to be. So if someone catches their appendix rupture early or before it ruptures, you should be out the next day and have some oral antibiotics and kind of be uncomfortable, but on your way. Not for me, though. So I needed to stay in hospital for 4 days and have intravenous antibiotics, I think three different types, to stop the infection from setting in. I was lucky to have, great support and painkillers and treatment throughout that time. My husband and the kids ended up being in Cairns a little longer than they intended to, because I did need to stay in and have that extra treatment. Oops.
Sarah, there must be a lesson learned in this. did you come out of this and say, okay, note to self, I'm going to listen to my body a little bit more? Or what did you decide as a result of this? Because I think stoic is a wonderful word, but there comes a point where you almost endangered your own life being stoic, didn't you?
I don't. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because obviously, I'm not going to have my appendix burst again, so I'm not going to go through the same experience, the exact same experience again. But yeah, I do. I often reflect on if I'm feeling unwell or what is that. You know, I don't want to go to doom and gloom land of, you know, oh, I'm dying or it's a tumor or you know, something like that. But I do try to take a minute to think, okay, what are the other things that it could be rather than just what I first think that it is? Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of an experience, Sarah. So you ended up then returning home to Weipa with the family. Was there a longer recovery period or were you pretty much okay once the antibiotics had done their work and the surgery had been recovered from?
Yeah, I was really fortunate that I was on the road to recovery kind of from everything that they'd done in hospital. I was pretty much ready to go. I did need to, I think 2 weeks I was not allowed to drive because of the impact to my my stomach muscles and so on. So needed to take it easy for 2 weeks. So I did take that time and rest and a little bit of work from home, but really not too much so that I could make sure that I was better. Because I had learnt my lesson by this point, right? So I didn't want to overdo it and then find myself unwell in a different way. So I took the advice and I rested for the period of my medical professional's advice. So yeah. But road of recovery from there. So only up and up. Fortunately, no complications, thank goodness.
Right. And then about 6 months later or so, you moved back to Brisbane. Has it been a culture shock to come back to the Big Smoke and with the family and so on from such a beautiful little remote community? Has it been a change?
Absolutely. You know, we have family in Brisbane, so we would often visit, but there's a real difference between kind of driving from the airport out into the area where my family live, which is a little bit more rural compared to kind of having to come in and out of the city most days. So absolutely, traffic lights, driving in a city, using GPS, not knowing where I'm going, having a four-wheel drive and feeling really scared to drive it because there are kind of so many other cars around. Just parking in a shopping centre, you know, is a daunting experience. And both of my kids were born, not born in Weipa, obviously, but born while we were in Weipa. So they'd never lived anywhere else either. So, you know, wearing pants all the time and having to put shoes on were both really interesting experiences for my kids. But I think we've managed to adapt.
Well, at some point you should come down to the southern tablelands of New South Wales and experience the weather that we have down here. The kids will definitely need shoes.
Absolutely. That first winter was pretty brutal, I must tell you. I thought that I was ready to be away from the heat of the Weipa wet season, but once we got to the winter of Brisbane and the limited sunshine that comes kind of in those shorter days, I was feeling very sorry for myself for a little while. Until I found that I needed to just buy more winter clothes. That was the answer.
Yeah. If you were reflecting back on this whole experience, is there any advice that you would give to somebody, a mum who's, you know, busy and managing work and managing family and is running into some sort of unexplained health issue? Would you have some advice for them about what they should do rather than not do?
I feel a little bit like I'm contradicting myself, of course, but I think just taking that time to stop and listen, and equally kind of a problem shared, you know, is a problem solved really too. So I do feel like I should have kind of been a little bit more open around just saying out loud, I haven't been feeling well for a couple of days and this seems to be getting worse, either to my husband or my friend Maz as well. So, you know, just to talk it out probably would have made me stop and reflect a little earlier than I did. So never taking ourselves for granted, remote community or not, these things can happen, right? So don't take your own health for granted, I think is my biggest takeaway.
Well, I'm really glad that you're there in Brisbane with your family and you're healthy and happy and have a big smile on your face. And
it's touch and go, that's for sure.
And no, but I'm really glad that we were able to help at that time, but also that it all turned out okay in the end, because that's really what it's all about, isn't it? It's about just making sure that life can continue and that we learn some lessons and move on. So yeah. I'm really happy that that happened.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I am keen to share my story, particularly the RFDS component of it, because, I mean, it's probably not the best compliment to say that it was a standard status quo trip on a plane, but that is exactly what you need and want at that time in a really critical experience. So I think it was a really important part in my story, and I was really happy to be able to promote, and I was lucky enough to meet the crew and have a look at the planes as well at a different date. So what I can do to communicate the importance of that service is really important to me.
That's great, Sarah. Well, I wish you all the best and your family, and stay warm. Winter's on its way.
It is. Thank you, Lana. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening. Word of mouth is always the best promotion for a podcast. So if you enjoy this podcast or a specific story, please share with family and friends. If you haven't already, join our Facebook group called the Flying Doctor Podcast Community. And you can also send feedback, questions or comments to me directly at lana.mitchell@rfds.org.au. Donations to support the Royal Flying Doctor Service can always be made through our website at flyingdoctor.org.au. The Flying Doctor Podcast was presented by me, Lana Mitchell, and senior producer is Mandy Coolan. Before I head off, I just want to thank one last time our sponsor and major national partner, Isuzu Ute Australia. Isuzu is committed to supporting the communities in which the RFDS operates, and this podcast would not be possible without their support. To learn more, search Isuzu Ute online.